Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everyone. Welcome, welcome. Well, today we're looking at why so many people are unhappy at work, how you can transcend workplace struggles, how you can beat the Sunday night blues, and how you can find a new job even when no one is hiring. And we'll be discussing and exploring all that with career consultant Ford Myers, and then later in today's show, psychologist Deborah Mandel. We'll also talk with a local Seattle man who struggled with his job search for a long time after being fired from a 9-year career with Microsoft. Michael Serkan eventually took a fresh approach to his job search, which reinvented his career and landed him the job he was looking for. And we'll find out what he did to make that happen later on today. First, I'm very pleased to welcome Ford Myers. He's a career coach, speaker, and author. He's held senior consulting positions at three of the largest nations career service firms, and for the past 19 years, he's been the president of Career Potential, a company that helps clients take charge of their careers, create the work they love, and earn what they deserve. Ford's articles and interviews have appeared in many national publications. He's been a frequent guest on TV and radio across the country, and his new book is called Get the Job You Want, Even When No One is Hiring. Ford Myers, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much, Vicki. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I'm curious, before we dive into this, how you got started in career consulting. What was it that drove you to that?
Well, I am myself a career changer. This was not always the field that I was in. And I got to a certain point in my career, which was quite successful, but I just felt something was missing. I felt like I wasn't doing my right work. I felt like even though I was successful with all the outward signs of success, I didn't feel fulfilled, and I didn't feel like I was aligned, and I didn't feel that I was being true to myself or making my greatest contribution in the world. So I went to see a career counselor, and it was a completely eye-opening experience. We did career testing. We did career counseling, what they now call career coaching, mm-hmm. and it opened my eyes, turned my head around, and it led me into a completely new field, which was consulting. Essentially, I started out doing organization development consulting, human resource consulting, and then finally I found my real niche when the HR work led me into career work, and then, of course, I worked at the large outplacement or career service companies, learned the whole business, and then went out on my own again in 2002.
So you really know about what you're speaking.
I've been there, and I've done that.
Yes, and wrote the book now. So I know so many people, Ford, and I'm sure this is why you approach this in your work too, but I know so many people who get to that Sunday afternoon. My time when I worked at the bank many, many moons ago was about 3 or 4 o'clock Sunday afternoon, and I'd start thinking, oh no, I have to go to the bank tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
But you say people don't have to be unhappy at work just to feel that way.
Well, no, they don't. Basically, it's like this. The people who are in their right work or who love their work, who feel that they are aligned properly and doing the right kind of job, they don't suffer from the Sunday night blues. Or if they do, it's only very fleeting, it's very quick, no big deal. I mean, look, nobody looks forward to every day at work. There's going to be good days and bad. But we're talking about something much more profound here. We're talking about, do you get that horrible, oppressive, depressing feeling on Sunday nights routinely? If that's your case, then there's something seriously wrong and a change needs to occur.
Yes, and having been there myself, I know that we do need to look at those signals and pay attention to them. And you say oftentimes, you know, it's because when we feel that frustration and that angst because we're not meeting our goals, professional or personal, but you have 6 steps that you recommend to beat those Sunday night mm-hmm. blues, and I want to take a look at that today.
Sure.
You want us to establish a fresh approach to work on Monday. So step one is what?
Well, step one is to plan out your week on Sunday night, the night before you go back to work, I'm talking here about writing down your tasks, being very clear on what you want to achieve for the following week, putting it down into smaller pieces, sort of bite-sized pieces, so that it doesn't seem so overwhelming, and really have a plan for your week, and also keep in mind, in the back of your mind, how this fits into your larger context of your career. In other words, by writing it down, it becomes less overwhelming, it becomes more easy to manage.
Yeah, and I think from my perspective, because this is actually what I did many years ago, was I would do my planning while 60 Minutes was on.
Perfect.
So I'd watch that with one eye and do my planning with the other. But it gave me some sense of control over what was going to happen next week, even though it may have been illusionary to some point.
No, you said something very smart there. You said it gave you more sense of control. Well, a lot of people feel that horrible feeling on Sunday nights because they feel like the job is controlling them and they have to go back into this control situation, whereas they feel like their weekend is theirs to control. But that's an illusion, okay? There is no difference. If you are managing your career properly, then you're still the one in control. You're in control of your weekend. You're also in control of your weekdays.
Yes, and you talk about this in your book, how, you know, we don't just go to work and manage a job. We have to manage our careers day in, day out.
That's correct.
Yeah. So step number two, you say schedule at least one activity every Monday that you truly enjoy. Mine's doing the show.
Okay. Well, that's perfect. So you put your finger on it. The point is here, okay, so let's say Monday's a tough day. Let's say you're going to have a million meetings, tons of deadlines. Everything's been ramping up over the weekend. It's going to hit you like a dam breaking on Monday. Well, okay, fine. But what about you? What about scheduling one activity every Monday that you truly enjoy? See, this will give you something to look forward to at the beginning of your week. And I've seen people do this, and it actually works. It gives them a reason to get up in the morning. It makes them feel good about getting back into their work week.
Yeah. Are you there?
Still here.
Yeah. Okay. I thought we'd lost you then.
No.
So that makes perfect sense. And I love this one. Number three is make Monday career day. Tell us what you mean by that, Ford.
Well, this ties very closely into number two. So step number three would be make Monday career day. This means you want to devote part of every Monday to your own career, your own career management activities. This could be either a networking meeting, meeting someone over lunch to talk about career. You can be putting some time aside for updating your resume and your other career documents. You could be researching other career opportunities, although I don't suggest you do this at your desk at work. You can maybe do it during your lunch hour or stop into the library or something like that. My point here is that if you make part of Monday your day for your own career management, then you'll really feel a lot better about it.
Yes, definitely. And enhancing that sense of control again.
Yes.
Number four, assess whether you're in the right career or job in the first place. This is a huge one because so many of us at some point in our lives just fall into a career or a job and stay there way too long.
Well, you're exactly right, Vicki. And see, this is a very, very important one about, you know, deciding if you're in the right job or career in the first place. Because, unfortunately, many people become complacent. They become defeated or resigned. And they almost get into this frame of mind where they say, well, of course I hate my job. That's why they call it work. Or,
right.
Of course I don't like my job. Who likes their job? See, I don't buy into any of that. I believe that everyone is put on the planet to do a certain kind of work, to make a certain kind of contribution. And if you haven't found your right work yet, then it's your duty and your obligation and your responsibility to find your right work. Because there is a profound and fundamental difference between going to work in a job you can't stand and going to a work that feels like your right work when you're fully aligned and fully engaged. That is a goal that I work on with every one of my clients, and it is attainable.
Absolutely, and I can so relate to that, because when you are doing something that you really love to do, and great when you're getting paid for it too, you still lose track of time. I mean, you just totally lose track of time, I think.
That's right, and some people call that being in the zone or being in flow.
Yeah.
It's all the same thing. But you are exactly right. When you're doing your right work, it does not feel like work with a capital W. It feels just more like you're doing what you're supposed to be doing and like you're engaged and alive and making a contribution that you feel proud of.
Yes, and that being proud of it is part of the battle, I think. That's right. Very key point. Leading right into step five, that kind of follows on, change your attitude, because we're not going to get very far with a bad attitude.
No, it's true, you know. Whether you're applying for a job or whether you're already in a job, I tell you, the people around you and the boss and the interviewer, they can smell your negativity a mile away. You know, you become a repelling force instead of an attracting force. The kind of negativity and cynicism, the disengagement that appears in today's workforce is absolutely tragic. There is an alternative. People do not have to be so negative and cynical. So if you've been complaining about your job for a long time, if you're always feeling negative, if it drains you, then there's something wrong, and you, and only you, can fix that.
Right.
The person needs to take full responsibility for their situation and decide to change it for the better. Instead of waiting around for the boss to change it, or instead of waiting around for the company to change, or waiting for some job to fall in your lap, it's not going to happen. Every person has to take 100% responsibility. That's the first step toward shifting toward a better attitude.
Yes. And, the mere fact that we've taken that one step toward improving our own life makes us feel better. And that itself is self-propelling, I think.
Totally.
So number six is focus on long-term objectives. And I want to let listeners know we're talking about, you know, six steps to beat the Sunday night blues. And Ford's book, Get the Job You Want Even When No One's Hiring. I said to you before the show, Ford, that this is absolutely one of the best books I've read on this subject. We've done other shows on, you know, getting hired and different tacks, but you cover so much information in here, and it's so useful, and it's like a workbook. People can actually work mm-hmm. through it too.
Thank you for saying so, Vicki. I tried very hard in writing the book to make it very practical, very accessible, very real world.
Yeah. So let's look at number six, and then I want to look at a couple of tips for
sure.
How to get a job when no one is hiring. Number six, as we said, is focus on long-term objectives. Why is that so important at this stage when you're just trying to, get a new job?
Well, okay. See, unfortunately, too many people look at their jobs as finite, stepping stone type of activities. They don't have a long-term view. They don't have a plan. They don't see any long-term objectives, and they don't know where they're going ultimately. They don't know where they want to wind up at the pinnacle of their career. This is very, very unfortunate, because in my work, we start from the end game and then work backwards. So you start with the ultimate goal in mind and then fill in the interim steps to get you there ultimately. And when you have these kinds of meaningful long-range goals, then you don't focus so much on Monday morning. Or you won't feel so badly the Sunday night blues, because everything you're doing is in the service of a worthy long-term goal. That shifts everything. That changes the entire dynamic, mentally and emotionally.
Okay, very good. Great, great tips there. So since the book is called Get the Job You Want Even When No One's Hiring, I want to look at a couple of tips there.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best ways you say, you say the obvious, you know, you usually find a job when you're not looking for it. If you're going out looking for a job, that's probably the wrong approach to take. So just respond to that if you would.
Okay. What I mean more specifically is this. If you are good at managing your career, if you're good, for example, at building and nourishing and maintaining your network, if you're good at researching and keeping your ear to the ground so that you know when opportunities are arising, if you're good at being perceived as an expert in your field, and on and on and on, these are things that will have opportunities drawn to you like a magnet instead of you always having to go out begging for jobs. So by doing some of these strategies, a few of which I just mentioned, the goal, obviously, is to get jobs coming to you instead of you having to go out looking for them.
Right. And, you know, used to be you could just go knock on the door and meet the HR person. We can't do that there anymore.
No, not anymore.
Can't get past security. So the tips you're giving are really invaluable. So I loved this in the book, and I wonder if we can share this before we close out today. The number one way to get a job when no one is hiring is, you say, to create a proposal for service.
Yes. Well, this is a technique called proposal for service. It's also called a work proposal. Lately, I've been calling it a work proposal because it's just easier to say. Mm-hmm. But here's the bottom line. It comes in stages or steps. The first thing a person needs to do is identify the needs and problems and challenges of an employer. This could be done casually, informally, or it could be done formally, like at an interview. And once you're able to ask the right questions, get to the heart of their pain, understand what keeps them up at night, uncover what their greatest challenges and problems are, then you can begin to formulate ideas, strategies, suggestions through which this employer might be able to benefit. So after you've had a long meeting or a long interview, you can go away from the meeting, put down some thoughts and ideas on paper, and then tell the person that you have some ideas you'd like to share that may be of value to them, that would help them to overcome some of their challenges and needs that they described. Almost 100% of the time, that person will be happy and eager to have you come back in and explain your ideas. So that's what you do. You propose some ideas, and then what often happens is that they will create an opportunity for you. Even though there was no job listed, you're such a good problem solver, you understand their needs so perfectly, they may actually create a position for you. Now, I know this is true because I've done this with many clients, and I myself did this. My last full-time job before I went off on my own in my own business was as a result of me creating a position, or more accurately, co-creating a position with the employer.
Yeah, absolutely. I've done this myself. I saw a job, a regular full-time job, which sounded really interesting, and I wasn't interested in being an FTE, a full-time employee. So I put a proposal together that they outsource it to me, and it worked. So mm-hmm. there are many ways that can work for you.
That's right. But unfortunately, Vicky, so many people, they have this mentality like, please give me a job. I want the job. Please hire me. I need a job. I need a job. Will you hire me? Instead of, you know, putting it all about you, it shouldn't be all about you. The interview should be all about them, all about the interviewer and the company and the employer. This is a basic fundamental shift that people need to make, but unfortunately, they're so stuck in thinking about themselves that they don't understand that they're there to meet the employer's needs and not the other way around.
Right. Now, we're almost at the end of our segment, Ford, but I just really want to get this last question in because I think it's really important.
Sure.
Because so many people have been long-term unemployed. You say in the book, everyone should have an exit statement that explains why they are no longer with their previous company.
Yes.
And I'm thinking in particular in this case of people who are actually unemployed. So give us a tip. I know you've got bunches of examples in the book, but give us a couple if you would before we close out today.
Okay. Well, you need an exit statement or a departure statement because, let's face it, you're going to be asked. The employer will say, why aren't you working? Why are you out of work? What happened in your last job? So you have to have a pre-prepared statement that you've written down, memorized, and that you feel comfortable with on the tip of your tongue. It needs to be positive, not negative. It needs to be future-oriented, not past-oriented. It needs to take the spotlight off of you, as in, there's nothing you did wrong, but maybe you were caught up in a wave of change within your company, and you were just a victim along with many, many, many other people, unfortunately. It takes the spotlight off of you. What the employer is trying to determine is, did you mess up? Did you make a mistake? Were you fired for a good reason? The departure or exit statement clearly and succinctly answers that question and addresses the employer's concerns.
Ford Myers, you have written a great book. I really appreciate you being with us today and sharing 6 steps to beat the Sunday night blues. And I know in the book you say that most interviews end with, do you have any questions? And the worst answer you say is that we can give is no. And you have a list of 42 questions in here that give people another chance to separate themselves from the crowd. Ford Myers, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Vicky. It was a pleasure.
And you can find out more about Ford at a couple of different websites. Getthejobbook.com and careerpotential.com. Please stay with us when we come back. We'll be joined by Michael Sakan. Thank you.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
You listen to us, now we want to hear from you. We're ready to listen as you tell us about yourself, the radio programs you love, and your likes and dislikes. All you have to do is log on to 1150kknw.com, that's 1150kknw.com, and fill out the 2011 Alternative Talk Listener Survey. As a thank you, you will be entered to win a trip for two to Victoria, BC, including transportation, lodging, and continental champagne breakfast. Log on to 1150kknw.com because we're listening. Contest rules and details online at 1150kknw.com.
Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair discusses issues that are important to you, like good health and well-being, finding a new job and building your business, overcoming life's big challenges and making sense out of chaos, and living with passion and joy. Join us Mondays at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for show schedule and guest information.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Talk radio to help you live well, live strong.
Following the herd is fine until they lead you off a cliff. Think for yourself. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And we have a local man in our studio with us today, Michael Sakan. My next guest is going to share some hands-on practical tips about how he used podcasting and social media to reinvent his career after he was let go from Microsoft. And not only did it help him find a new job, it also helped him become a driving force in Seattle's social networking community. Michael Sakan has been a managing editor with PC Week Labs, an IT manager and a software engineer. He's currently a product and program manager at a software startup in Bellevue, and he also helps people learn how to use podcasting as a tool to grow their careers and businesses. Michael Sakan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Vicky.
So pleased to connect with you. I know you're very active in the local social networking community. But before we get to that, let's hear a little bit of your story. You were working at Microsoft. What happened?
I was working at Microsoft for 9 years in a variety of different roles in product and program management. And I was actually doing product planning in my last role, in working in the Windows division with a product I'm sure most people are familiar with. And there was a lot of cutbacks going on in 2009 in the company, and my group that I was in, they let go half of the people there. So I found myself out looking for work, and it isn't the easiest of job markets out there these days. And I was in an experience I'd never had an experience in my career before where I had to really work to get a job.
Right.
In the past, it had always been...
I think that's true for so many people. Yeah.
Jobs just came to me.
Yeah.
And they were so... It was a picking between everything that was all of the options that were available. So this was a very new experience for me. And it was really hard. I would send off resumes, and they'd go into a black hole, and I'd never hear anything back. I would even try contacting people who I used to know, asking to set up informational interviews and just get together and talk with them about their companies and so on. And most of my calls weren't being returned. So it was very frustrating and it was difficult to know what to do. And one of the things that I tried all kinds of different things, is I created a web page and I put a title up on the top. I called it Entrepreneurs Northwest, and I started inviting people to be guests on my podcast show. So I would invite business owners and professionals and say, hey, I'm really interested in this business you've got. I'd love to interview you on my podcast show and learn more about it. And all of a sudden, everybody was willing to talk with me.
Yeah.
And I think in the last two, since I was let go, I've done about 200 interviews. And all these are done over the phone. I use Skype to record my calls. There's free plugins you can get for Skype to record them. My guests, the only thing they have to have is a telephone. So I just call their phone. I do these from the couch in my home.
Right.
It's nothing. We're in a very nice studio here for the listeners who can't see.
Very
but
nice.
It's nothing like that. I mean, this is literally just sitting on my couch with a $20 USB headset calling people.
So what gave you the idea to do that?
Well, I had been doing podcasting as a hobby, which basically one night a week, some friends and I would get together and virtually on the phone and we'd rant about the economy and we'd record it and we'd have this economics podcast that we were doing for years. So I knew what podcasting was, but I was just trying to be creative, of thinking of ways to deal with
right.
the job market.
Right.
And so I thought about applying it. So it worked very well for me. But the good job I've got now, which I've had for over a year, came through podcasting. Someone who I interviewed at the end of the podcast, just like your previous caller, I heard him say that in your interviews, it's all about the other person. In my podcast, it's never about me.
Right.
I'm not there to sell them about me.
Right.
I'm asking them about their business. What are you doing? And what are the challenges you're facing? But what I found is that these people love me for it, and they really appreciate this podcast that's there. And in one of my interviews, this business person I was talking with at the end of the official recording show, he says, oh, Michael, what are you looking for? And I said, well, I'm looking for some program management roles these days. And he said, oh, did you ever know this person who worked at Microsoft? And I said, yeah, I worked with him years ago. And he said, well, you know, he's a VP at a startup in Bellevue. You should get in touch with him. And this is a person I wouldn't have thought of getting in touch with. So I called up I got the contact information for this person, and that's where I'm working now. So
very good.
It came through that. And so many amazing things happened because of this. One is on LinkedIn. I use LinkedIn heavily as well.
Right.
And
I just want to back up a second. I want to ask you just how long you were unemployed, first of all, and how long this took you to find the job.
It took me almost a year
to get a
full-time job. And in betwixt, so I was doing all these interviews and stuff, but I also did a lot of volunteer work. I worked for three different startups, putting in thousands of hours of work, doing real actual work with marketing and stuff, and I didn't get paid.
Yeah, so you're gathering more experience, you're gathering more stuff to put on your resume, more achievements, more accomplishments.
And being out there, getting to know people, right? Because
yeah.
I'm actually doing stuff. The fact I wasn't getting paid, to me, wasn't a reason not to be out working.
Right. So how do you work with other people, Michael, to help them find jobs through podcasting or help them build their businesses? How do you help them redirect their career paths?
Well, I believe every person should. The key to career and job success and business success is networking. It's knowing people and having relationships. And I believe podcasting is the most effective way to build those relationships. It opens doors. People will talk with you who otherwise wouldn't. And they love it. They appreciate that you're doing something for them. As opposed to if you sit down with somebody in it for a coffee, they feel they've done you a favor. And it's hard to get somebody to sit down and have an informational discussion with you for coffee anyway. But if you can get them to let you interview them for a podcast, one, they're more likely to let you do it. And two, they're really going to feel you've done something for them, and they're going to want to reciprocate and
yeah.
help you back.
Yeah.
It's just amazing the things that can happen. I've helped a number of other people do this now, so I know it can work for other people.
Right. And, you know, one of the things that Ford Myers, my previous guest, talks about in his book is creating that online community for yourself and writing, writing articles. If you're an expert in something, who better to write about
yeah.
it? You don't have to be a brilliant writer because every online site has editors, so they're going to edit whether you're a good writer or not. I also want to talk a little bit about, because we don't have a great deal of time, but I want to talk about how you've used other social media outlets to network. And I know that you are the driving force behind LinkedIn Seattle. So did you actually start LinkedIn Seattle?
So LinkedIn Seattle was founded by a gentleman by the name of Olivier Taupin a number of years ago. But one of the first things I did when I was looking for work is I went on LinkedIn and I joined groups that I thought would be useful. And I looked for Seattle, did a search for Seattle, and Link Seattle was the biggest group. It had about 15,000 members at the time when I joined.
And this is on LinkedIn.com.
This was on LinkedIn.com. And I just did a search for the keyword Seattle, and I found Link Seattle, and I joined it. And I noticed that the owner of the group was this gentleman by the name of Olivier. So what did I do? I invited him to be a guest on my podcast show. So I started talking with him, and I became a friend of his, actually. We became friends, and he was saying that he didn't have time to manage the group, that he was too busy doing other things, and I volunteered to manage the group, and I became the group manager in January 2010. And so I've been running the group since then. We're now at almost 30,000 members,
mm-hmm.
and in August of 2010, we started organizing monthly meetups where we have professionals get together to network in a real physical sense,
right,
to meet
right,
each other,
right.
And business owners, entrepreneurs. And the first one we set up, we had 300 people show up, and we were exceeding the limits of the facility where we were at. And we last October, we had 800 people show up at one of our events.
Wow.
And now we're actually now charging a $5 attendance fee. So some of the volume of people have come down. This month, we're having our one-year anniversary at the Space Needle. We're meeting in their conference center.
Congratulations, yeah.
And we're sold out.
And you're sold out. And so who might be interested in joining LinkedIn Seattle? There's no particular career group. Pretty much anybody who's interested in networking in Seattle can participate in that, correct?
LinkedIn Seattle is a great resource for our region. And it's broad. Any career, any business, we have a very, as I said, almost 30,000 members now, and it keeps growing. So it's a great place to go and meet people, both in person and in the group itself. You'll see people ask all kinds of questions about recommendations, about businesses and career ideas, and people are helping each other. And with all of these things, you get out of it what you put into it.
Absolutely. And you're a testament to that, because you went from unemployment to a great job, a new career, and podcasting champion there. I want to, before we have to end today, I want to make sure that people know how to get hold of you. I have to say that I am a member of LinkedIn.com, and I belong to several groups throughout the country, throughout the world, actually, because I'm on several international ones, too. And Michael's name is the one that pops up the most often. So where can people find you?
You can go to my website to learn about podcasting at www.practicalpodcasting.com. And in my members area, which is all free, but you do have to register as a member, I have a lot of great videos about LinkedIn secrets that tell you about how to use LinkedIn to meet people and how to use podcasting as well. And you can also join Link Seattle by just going to LinkedIn.com and doing a search for groups. Just look for Seattle as your keyword, and we're the top group.
There we go. And the other website, again, is practicalpodcasting.com. Michael Sirkin, thanks for being with us. Nice to hear a success story like that, and I appreciate you being with us today.
You're welcome. Thanks. And I just hope I can help some other people.
Yes, definitely. And, of course, you know, always reach out. I always tell listeners, just reach out to people, because, you know, that's why we have these guests on the show. And don't be afraid to just reach out and say, hey, I have a question. Please stay with us. When we come back, we'll be joined by Dr. Deborah Mandel, who says, hey, your boss is not your mother. We're going to talk about transference in the workplace, how to stop drama in the workplace. We'll be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals at Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
You listen to us Now we want to hear from you. We're ready to listen as you tell us about yourself, the radio programs you love, and your likes and dislikes. All you have to do is log on to 1150kknw.com. That's 1150kknw.com and fill out the 2011 Alternative Talk Listener Survey. As a thank you, you will be entered to win a trip for two to Victoria, BC, including transportation, lodging, and continental champagne breakfast. Log on to 1150kknw.com because we're listening. Contest rules and details online at 1150kknw.com.
Hi, this is Julie Forbes. Join me on Wednesday afternoons from 2 to 3 p.m. for the Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. Listen to discussions on dog-related topics and call in to voice your opinion or ask my opinion about your dog. We will talk about everything from dog behavior to pet food to dog training programs in prisons. The Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. Tune in Wednesdays from 2 to 3 p.m. on Alternative Talk 1150.
One is the loneliest number that you'll ever do.
Next week on Conversations Live, Dr. Brantley knows from talking with his patients that despite today's technology, people are lonelier than ever. He has some surefire tips to get you out of the doldrums and connecting with new friends. Vicki also talks with life coach Ellen Lubin Sherman, who invites you to step into your fabulous self. See conversationslive.net for more information or call Vicki at 800-495-7617.
Hi, I'm Andrea Kay, America's leading career expert. I know it's going to be a great conversation when Vicki St. Clair asked me to offer my career advice on her show. Vicki asks thoughtful questions, she's thorough, she works hard to bring you great guests who walk their talk with information and solutions that can lift your career and better your life so that you'll live well, live strong. My advice? Tune into our conversations and all the interviews on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair for thought-provoking insight and tips on the things that really matter in your life. And visit AndreaKay.com, that's Andrea, K-A-Y.com, for information about my books and loads of free practical advice and inspiration for your career.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
More choices, more topics, more shows, one station. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
You make sure you're connected. The writing's on the wall. But if your mind's neglected, somebody might fall, somebody might fall.
Well, next up, we're going to talk with Dr. Deborah Mandel, and we're going to talk about why so many people are unhappy at work and how you can transcend workplace power struggles and look at some of those transference issues we carry with us. I want to just tell you before we get there that we have a Be Free Business Expo this coming Saturday, August, I think it's actually on Saturday, yeah, August the 20th and 21st. In Bellevue. It's at the Maidenbauer Center in Bellevue. And it's for anyone who is beginning to take life by the reins and wants to create a life that you love. That's what this event is all about, according to the organizer, Kim Gonzalez. She's all about learning, connecting, and participating. And she said you can do all of that at this expo. There are going to be 40 different companies there, everything from jewelry to nutrition to clothing and online businesses. And there'll be plenty of opportunity for attendees to learn about becoming connected with and participating in the folks who are there. Kim says that people are out of work, unprepared for retirement, struggling financially, and they're unaware that there are a world of financial opportunities right here in this community. So if you're interested in that, you can check out more at BeFreeBusinessExpo.com. BeFreeBusinessExpo.com. I'm actually going to go down myself on Saturday. So I'll maybe see you there. All right, let's move on now. I'm really pleased to welcome back Dr. Deborah Mandel. She's been a clinical psychologist, speaker. Did I say columnist? Am I having a brain cramp here? Let me start. She's been a clinical psychologist, a speaker, a columnist, and media expert, and has helped many people mend what she calls their tender spots, empowering them to reach new heights of personal and professional power. She's written numerous books, including the one we're focusing on today, Your Boss is Not Your Mother, 8 Steps to Eliminating Office Drama and Creating Positive Relationships at Work. Dr. Deborah Mandel, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Well, I'm pleased to have you. This was so appropriate to find this book because I just, a few months back now, I'd had a situation with somebody and I couldn't wrap my head around why I was having a hard time connecting with this person. You know, lots of other people had had difficult times with this particular person too, but, you know, I thought I was special and I thought I should have been able to overcome it. And then I saw your book, Your Boss Is Not Your Mother, and I thought, okay, there's a connection. But I want to start off with, you say in the book that you could have been the poster girl for vulnerability. You said you had raw and protective nerves. You were like this in your entire existence, not just at work. So tell us a little bit about that and how things changed for you.
Oh, sure, absolutely. Well, when I first started writing, I wrote a book called Healing the Sensitive Heart, which is basically how our wounds from childhood get recreated in our intimate and personal relationships. And then, of course, it dawned on me, why are we limiting this to personal relationships? Our workplace relationships, where we spend a significant period of our time, can also aggravate and activate this old stuff from childhood so that we can end up transferring these wounds onto our bosses, our coworkers, our employees. So it's not just that your boss is not your mother. Maybe your boss is your mother, and there's a whole other chapter about that. But what we do is we can create the very same dynamics that we had in childhood in our family system within the workplace system. Because as you understand, a workplace system very much resembles a family. You have people that are at the top. You have people like your siblings and our coworkers, and that transference is very ripe to occur in those sorts of settings.
Yes. And, you know, I'll share that in my case, many years ago, I get on very well with my mom. She's, you know, my best friend. But many years ago, I used to work with her, but I found I worked better with my dad than with my mom. We didn't work together too well. And, you know, this person, I saw a certain behavior in that person that I saw in my mom, and I think it all came back. So this was a very appropriate book.
And that's exactly what I'm talking about, is that you'll have somebody in the position of authority, let's say, or even a coworker, and they resemble or they remind you, even unconsciously, of somebody that you had problems with in childhood. Let's say you had an overbearing or critical mother. In my case, that was true. I had a mom who was highly perfectionistic, mm-hmm. very critical, very demanding. No matter what I did, it was never good enough. I got straight A's. Why were they A pluses? You know,
right.
That sort of thing.
Right.
So the bar was always being raised, never felt like I could achieve. So in workplace settings earlier on in my career, when I worked in hospitals and institutions and such, and I had to work with, a bunch of colleagues and bosses and all that, I would be very ripe and activated by anybody who was expecting something of me. I would overachieve. I would overperform. I would overdo everything and then always feel like I was falling short and disappointing this person. So if I would go into the workplace and expecting things that weren't appropriate in the workplace to expect, you know, it's not my boss's job to validate my self-esteem. It's not my boss's job to give me kudos for every little thing I do. It's my boss's job to be a boss, be respectful, and for me to perform my job duties. But we often overexpect or underexpect depending on what our childhood wounds were like.
Right. And I love that throughout the book, you call these childhood sore spots, you call them bruises, because we're not, you know, even though if we do a lot of work on scripting, for example, we still have these little spots that we maybe are not aware of until someone pokes them.
Exactly. And then they just rise up from nowhere and you're just, well, how did I end up in this situation? Why am I having this conflict over and over again with this coworker who in and of themselves is a fine human being, but for some reason your buttons get pushed. You know, let's say you had a sister who was highly competitive mm-hmm. and you're in the workplace and you have a coworker who's highly competitive and you didn't resolve that with your sister or within yourself, then you're likely to have this competitive relationship with your coworker that's unnecessary.
Right, right. And you say that it's important we recognize our unhealed spots because we play them out in many different ways. We can sabotage our own success. We can expect less than we deserve, expect special favors from people. And there's a multitude of ways in which this can affect us.
Absolutely. And then what happens, sadly, is because that's the nature of the human beast, we'll start acting out. You know, instead, if we're not dealing with something proactively, we'll be dealing with it in a sabotaging way. So we may, let's say you have a boss who is highly demanding and who expects, you know, peak top performance from you at all times. And, you know, some days you have a bad day and then you start to get resentful toward your boss because you're thinking, oh my gosh, so much is being demanded of me. So then you start showing up late or you start working on doing stuff on the internet, planning your next family vacation, not doing your job because you feel burnt out and you're not talking about it proactively. You're going to find ways to relieve yourself in unhealthy ways.
Mm. You share 8 steps to saying goodbye to workplace drama and hello to positive relationships. Number one, you say, you know, befriend your emotional bruises, which we've kind of touched on a little, you know what they are and befriend them. Number two, ID how we make a mess of our professional life. How do we recognize that if we're not really aware of it? What are some clues?
Well, the first thing to recognize in that step is that our tendency is to try to find fault in others rather than looking within ourselves as to what we have control over and how we're creating this drama. You know, it's real easy to walk into the workplace and say, so-and-so is such a drama queen. But how are you facilitating or co-creating that drama is an important question to ask yourself, because that's the only thing we can control is our own reactions to things, our own responses to things. So it's really important to say, okay, if I'm having this problem consistently across people, places, and time, then probably I have something to do with. So being able to acknowledge that, and it's not about blame or shame. That's the last thing that I try to coach or teach people to do. You never point fingers and say, that's who's at fault or I'm at fault. It's really, how am I co-creating this? What's my responsibility in this? How can I be accountable so that therefore I can change it?
Right. Step number three is understanding transference. And I think this is huge. And you talk about transference traps in the book. What are some common traps that we fall into and what do we need to know about that?
So just first, transference is the concept basically when we have old stuff, unresolved emotional bruises from childhood with significant caregivers or siblings or cousins, whomever, that had a significant piece in our lives. In adulthood, our tendency is to project some of that old baggage onto our current relationship. So if somebody resembles one of your caregivers or somebody that you still have unfinished business with, then you're likely to start projecting old feelings and thoughts, reactions, and expectations onto that person simply because of certain mannerisms that they have. So I do talk about transference traps as it can be as simple as somebody's mannerisms, you know, how they carry themselves. It could be someone's tone of voice. Maybe somebody has kind of a high-pitched voice that reminds you of your mother who used to scream at you 20 times a day. Somebody's smell, somebody's wearing a particular cologne that your mother or your father or your sister or somebody wore who you still have unhappy feelings toward. That can trigger transference reactions. Somebody's style of dress or their physical characteristics, personality characteristics, that's a big one. You know, somebody maybe has a certain tendency, maybe they're kind of stubborn, or maybe they make jokes when jokes aren't really appropriate. Mm-hmm. That reminds you of somebody who used to, let's say, tease you a lot when you were a child, make fun of you. And then, so that activates an old wound. Now, all of a sudden, that person, the little bit of overlap that they have with this person that you still have unfinished business with, activates these old wounds, and then you start behaving like a child.
And so how do we, step number four is separating old stuff from the truly intolerable, because I have been in situations, and I'm sure most listeners have too, where you really try to work, you know, a solution with somebody and you come to the conclusion, like I did with the person I mentioned earlier, you know what, it's never going to happen. That person isn't happy with anybody. She's not happy with herself and blah, blah. You know, I just decided I was going to have to move on and just, you know, deal with it as professionally as I could.
And I call those the out of bounds behaviors. Those are the behaviors of people that in the workplace, it's just unacceptable. No one should ever have to tolerate that sort of experience, such as the verbal abuser. You know, somebody who really is calling you names, putting you down, insulting you. You have that kind of boss or coworker, intolerable. The yeller, you know, somebody who just randomly just starts shouting because they have rage control problems, they have anger management problems, you know, that you should not have to be subjected to that on a daily basis. Mm. Another one that's much more subtle is the backstabber. If you have somebody who's basically trying to get information out of you and then uses it against you, that is clearly an intolerable kind of workplace situation, or the discriminator, or the rule breaker. You know, there's somebody who always thinks that the rules don't apply to them, applies to everybody else, but not to them. You really can't work in that kind of environment because you really never know what's going to be thrown at you or not thrown at you. You know, it just becomes, you don't know what you're dodging on a daily basis.
Right.
And then, of course, clearly the physical assaulter or the sexual discriminator, the sexual abuser, not good, not okay. And when, if you've discovered, by my saying these things, that you're in that kind of workplace situation, you do want to do due diligence to get out. You don't want to necessarily sabotage your career or do something impulsively or without a plan, but you definitely want to consider, okay, this, in this case, it's really not me. This is not my pattern. This is a pattern of this particular individual, and I should not have to be put in that position.
Right, right. Step number five is transcending power struggles. And this is huge because I have worked with people and I have seen them struggle with each other to gain power, and one will win one week and the other wins the next week. And, you know, I it's kind of like I'm watching this this little tennis match between them. How do we remove ourselves from that? How do you recommend, and if we're in a power struggle, how do you recommend we step back from it?
Yeah, and I did describe different types of power struggles because you have aggressor meets aggressor, you have avoider meets avoider, or you have avoider meets aggressor. So I give some tips and tools on each of those. But in general, if you're in a power struggle with someone, what you realize is that it really doesn't matter which way you go. The other person is always trying to win, and that becomes a no-win situation. So the best thing to do is try to disengage from the power struggle. And one of the best techniques that you can do in a power struggle is never say the word you. Because the minute you say you, you're giving somebody else the ability to argue with you.
Mm.
If I just say I, it is my experience that I have blah, 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 or I tend to feel or see things this way, then you're not going to be arguing with somebody. You're simply going to be stating your point of view. You can always validate someone else's point of view, not necessarily agreeing with them.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, sometimes we've just got to agree to disagree.
Mm-hmm. Or just simply say, I understand that that's your point of view, and I hear that that's your point of view, and based on your experience, that makes perfect sense.
Yes. Yeah. Good advice. Steps number 6, 7, and 8 are learn how to tell harmless flirtation from sexual harassment, develop a sense of humor toward inevitable workplace turmoil, which I think is really key, and enjoy the emotional fruits of your labor. We're almost at the end of our segment. Just flies by. So I want to ask you what you see as being really critical if somebody is has listened to this conversation and recognizes, oh, I'm in that place where I'm transferring. What do they need to do right now?
The first thing to do is just acknowledge that. Be able to say, oh, wow, I do have old emotional baggage that I have to clear out. Because you know what? You know, this may be a pretty cool workplace environment if I could get over that. If I were a little bit less sensitive, if I were a little less reactive to certain people's turmoil, you can kind of step back and, you know, look at some of the characters at your workplace, like cartoon characters. Instead of getting engaged in the drama of it, just go, oh, that's Mickey Mouse. You know, Mickey Mouse is just doing his or her thing today. You know, that's Daffy Duck. You know, you turn things in your mind into something that makes you chuckle like you are right now. And all of a sudden, if you're not totally engaged with it, it's less offensive. But if some of the things that I did talk about as the out-of-balance behaviors you've identified with, if an audience member has said, oh, yeah, this person, they yell at me every day. Well, then you have to rethink your commitment to that environment and maybe consult with someone in human resources, some of your friends, people you trust. Go see a counselor, a professional, talk it through, see what the best steps and course of action can be for your to create a healthy future for yourself.
Sounds good. Very good advice, Dr. Deborah Mandel. I appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you.
Listeners can find out more about you. Correct me if this is wrong, but I have drdeboraonline.com as your website.
Yes. Yep. drdeboraonline.com.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. DrDeborahOnline.com, again, is the website. And the book, great book, lots of information in here that I didn't get a chance to go to. I really enjoyed the section on procrastination. and realized that some of I had an issue from childhood on that. But Your Boss Is Not Your Mother, 8 Steps to Eliminating Office Drama and Creating Positive Relationships at Work by Dr. Deborah Mandel. Thank you. And before we go today, we are still celebrating the whole month of August, our anniversary, but I didn't have time to, we don't have time to run a clip today. We've run out of time. If you go to the website and look in the search box for Linda Babcock, Linda Babcock, there's a great segment there that kind of follows on today's show about power negotiations for women who don't like to ask. See you next week. Until then, live well, live strong.